This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. About 3 years ago, now 14-year-old Marley Dias decided to collect and donate 1,000 children's books that feature black girls as the lead character. It turned into a viral social media campaign with a hashtag, 1,000 Black Girl Books.
Since then, she's written her own book, Marley Gets It Done and So Can You, served as an editor-in-residence of her own digital zine on Elle.com, and has spoken at national events on girls and women. To date, her campaign has resulted in more than 12,000 books collected.
Marley will be the keynote speaker at the inaugural State of Wisconsin Girls Summit at Alverno College this weekend, which will address issues facing girls in Wisconsin from cyberbullying to poverty. Lake Effect's Mayon Silver spoke with Marley about what prompted her to start the 1,000 Black Girl Books.
I started 1,000 Black Girl Books because I was an avid reader. And in my fifth grade class, I was so excited that I was able to finally have, you know, assigned readings, and I got to be a part of this reading community. But I noticed that all these books featured white boys and their dogs as the main character. So I became very frustrated because as much as I love to read, we were reading the same type of story over and over again, and we didn't get to learn about other people's experiences. Now, in my own home, my mom and my dad had always provided me with books that featured black girls like me, white boys and their dogs, Latina girls, Asian boys, people of all different experiences. And I think it's really important that we value diversity and the way that it helps other people be empathetic and respect others' experiences. So I want to make sure that every student can now have the experience of being able to see themselves as the main character and see their classmates reflected as the main characters in the books that they're assigned.
What role has seeing that representation in books meant to you?
A huge importance of being able to recognize yourself. It boosts confidence. And it also allows for kids to become more engaged in literacy. So a lot of the times reading is used as a punishment where if you're on your phone, your parents might say, go to your room and read, or why don't you read a book? And they use this negative connotation and these negative words to associate with books. What we want to do by seeing yourself, you see, oh my God, I can relate to this. This is what my parents say. This is what my community is like. So now I want to read more stories where I can see myself and feel as though I'm valued. And with regards to identity, if we're able to see that, oh, I'm reading a book about a black girl and I'm a black girl and they had a really difficult situation where they had friendship drama or they didn't know what to do and they were stressed with school, we can look at these characters and relate to their experiences and their resources and their education and say, okay, now I have the tools to be able to change the world or, you know, handle friendship drama and things like that.
Well, in talking about the tools to change the world, was it your plan to become an activist, or was it just as simple as trying to highlight representation for young black girls?
So I don't think even that I call myself an activist, but it's definitely been the title that has been given to the work that I do. And I love my title. I love the fact that I can do something that gives me a title. But when I started, it was really out of this frustration of not seeing myself reflected. And it wasn't to think, oh, I want to become an activist. I think that this is my career. This is what I want to do. But it was that I was so frustrated that my parents would always push me to just, even the little things, want to create change to not only better the system for yourself, but better those around you. So I don't think that I was like, it was a goal like, oh, this is the word that can describe exactly how I want to create change. But if we normalize activism in a way where it's not even a title, but just a part of every person's life, I think that's the next step we can reach as people that want to create social change.
It just naturally evolved as something you were passionate about.
Yeah, that's exactly how it evolved.
So what are some of the books that you've discovered in this campaign that you would like people to know about? And, like, can you give us a little synopsis of something?
So I'll go from youngest to, like, oldest. So one of the books for around, you know, second grade to fourth grade is One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia. This is a great book. I definitely talks about the different sides of the civil rights movement. So we know a lot about, you know, charismatic leaders like, you know, Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and Coretta Scott King, but we don't learn a lot about the Black Panther Party. And what this book does is it talks about three young girls and their experience going to visit their mother in as she's a Black Panther, and they learn a lot about civil rights and how it's not just about Martin Luther King, and it talks a lot about sisterhood, which is really important to me, and creating these community spaces that help facilitate change and growth. So my 5th to 7th grade book, I would say, is Brown Girl Dreaming by Jacqueline Woodson. Jacqueline Woodson is my favorite author of all time. She has been a huge supporter of 1,000 Black Girl Books. And Brown Girl Dreaming is her memoir, but it's written in verse. So it definitely teaches a lot of skills that educators can use about understanding poetry and deciphering poetry. But it is also really emotional. And it talks a lot about, you know, moving from urban spaces in New York and in more like urban and populated areas and going to rural spaces, and how you can translate and kind of a code switch as a Black girl in those communities. And then my last book, which is for teenagers and above, so I would say 8th grade and up, is Another Brooklyn, once again, by Jacqueline Woodson. I think that she tells these stories in like such beautiful ways about friendship. And with Another Brooklyn, it talks about gentrification of New York, which is something that happened a lot in the 1970s, but it also happened a lot now. So I think it's something that teachers can use as both a history lesson, but also as a tool to help create conversations, just like the summit wants to do, about how we can change the world and how we can help each other and be communities that want to create change.
So in the first book you mentioned, you talked about the connection between civil rights and sisterhood, that both of those are elements present in the book. Can you talk about the intersection of being Black and being a girl, or in some cases being a woman? What does that intersection mean to you?
I think this is a phenomenal question, because a lot of the time intersectionality is not a term that we like to bring up because they think it's too big for kids to understand. But intersectionality is so important to sharing our experiences, because I cannot just relate to the single experience of being Black or the single experience of being a girl. But in fact, there is a multitude of ways in which my experiences cross paths, whether it's experiencing racism and sexism, whether it's being able to speak to millions of Black girls, because we can all relate about doing our hair at night and sleeping with a bonnet and having a sit between our parents' legs when they braid our hair. And it talks, I think intersectionality is what allows for me to relate to so many young people, because we are at these crossroads where all of us meet in some way, and we're able to use those experiences at that path to help create change and tell our stories.
How can social structures and, for instance, schools support that intersection?
I think the best way that schools can support these intersections right now is by showing media that first explains intersectionality, and then showing videos in class and meeting people that are activists like me, or people like Yara Shahidi, or people like the people that run the Women's March, talking to people like Tarana Burke. And there are wonderful women out there that are creating change. And if we're able to talk to them and watch videos and learn about their ideas and their experiences, they talk about intersectionality in not only a way that is fun and engaging, but in a way that is serious and convincing. So well, I think we can do that in, by implementing into curriculums ways for media that help kids see activists.
And what were your expectations in starting this project and building a collection of books, which is it beyond 11,000 books now?
We're at 12,000 books right now. And it has exceeded my expectations so much. I didn't even think I was actually going to collect 1,000 Black Girl books. It was really about the process of just, you know, starting a goal, wanting to create a project, and then pursuing it as much as I possibly could. And through the power of social media and TV appearances and all these teachers and educators that support the campaign, we have now reached 12,000 books.
How far do you see this campaign going? Like, what future do you envision for the campaign?
So I started 1,000 Black Girl Books to fill the gap that I saw in 5th grade. And I still want to continue to collect and donate books to schools and communities, but I think that we are now expanding to the digital stage, where we want to create this app that is the resource guide. So we have an online resource guide on our website. The website is www.grassrootscommunityfoundation.org, and that has a list of 1,000 of the books that have been collected. But we want to make sure that we can create apps so that independent authors or self-published authors are able to get their stories out there and can express the experiences of Black girls and show that to more educators and get it into the hands of more superintendents to create curriculums that surround diversity and inclusion.
Is it remotely possible for one person to read those 12,000 books? Are you taking a stab at it?
I have been taking a stab at the picture books. I've been working my way through every single picture book because they are so short compared to the books, because we have such a wide variety. You know, we have books that that are pre-K books, and we also have books that are full academic journals. So we try to make sure that there's a variety, and I read the ones that are, you know, the most buzzworthy or the ones that I know people are reading right now so we can talk about them. But, you know, it's a lot of books, 12,000 books, so I'm trying my best.
Yeah, it would take, you know, years probably to get through all of that.
I'm a fast reader, and if I could get some of my friends on this, I think we could tackle a lot of them. But for now, we're just working page by page.
Has anything surprised you about some of the authors or some of the books that you've read that maybe you weren't expecting?
I think one of the things that surprised me about the authors was the fact that they are self-published. So I was wondering, like, why are there so many Black girl books that are not in schools, and it's because a lot of them are not published through big publishing houses. We have Simon & Schuster, we have Little Brown Books, we have Scholastic, and they're all publishing lots of books every year, and they're mega corporations. But a lot of the authors that are telling these stories of Black girls are self-published or from really small publishing houses. So their books are not put on the same national stage or even international stage as these big publishing houses' books that they create and they publish. So I was so surprised to see that there are so many books out there. It's just that we do not have access to them because they are not on the same platform as books that come from really big publishing houses.
Are you thinking of maybe creating a space where all of these books can exist in one space?
So that's what we want to use the resource guide for. I think that the best way to do it is digitally. Like in today's day and age, it's the best way to get all of these books out there in the best way we can, put them all on the same platform, same stage, same level of promotion, and make it really easy for people to buy and support these authors.
And we're going to shift a little bit now. You're going to be in town for the Wisconsin Girls Summit. What does it feel like to be the keynote speaker at just 14 years old?
I am so excited to be the keynote speaker at this inaugural Girls Summit in Wisconsin. I'm so happy because we don't have a lot of conferences that are focused on facilitating conversations with girls, by girls, and for girls. So I'm so excited that we were able to talk about the challenges and the issues that girls face, and then talk about the intersectionality of girls of color, LGBTQ girls, and girls with so many different experiences. And I think this conference is a great place to facilitate it, and I hope I can motivate other girls to want to be student activists and social activists.
Thank you so much, Marley Dias, and good luck.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a nice day.
You too.
Marley Dias is the creator of the 1,000 Black Girl Books campaign and author of the book, Marley Gets It Done, and So Can You. The 14-year-old will be the keynote speaker at the inaugural State of Wisconsin Girls Summit at Alverno College this weekend. She spoke with WUWM's Mayon Silver, and you can read more about her and this weekend's event at WUWM.com.